வெல்கம் டு சர்ஜிக்கல் எஜுகேட்டர் பாட்காஸ்ட், த ஷோ தட் பிரிங்ஸ் கிளாரிட்டி டு மெடிக்கல் ஸ்டூடெண்ட்ஸ் அண்ட் சர்ஜிக்கல் ட்ரைனீஸ் ஆன் காம்ப்ளெக்ஸ் சர்ஜிக்கல் டாபிக்ஸ். ஐ ஆம் யுவர் ஹோஸ்ட் ஆர் மாஸ்டர் ஆஃப் செரிமனி ஃபார் திஸ் எபிசோட். டுடே வி ஆர் கோயிங் டு டிஸ்கஸ் அபவுட் சிக்மாய்ட் வால்வ்லெஸ், one of the common causes of large bowel obstruction. Joining us today is Professor Dr. Selvaraj, an experienced general and pediatric surgeon. Welcome, Dr. Selvaraj. Hello, MC. Thank you. I am excited to talk on this important topic. Well, what is the epidemiology of sigmoid valvulus, doctor? Sigmoid valvulus is a relatively uncommon cause of intestinal obstruction in the United States, accounting for fewer than 10% of the total cases. However, in other parts of the world, it plays a more prominent role. About 50 to 80% of intestinal obstruction cases are sigmoid valvulus, I mean the large bowel obstruction. The condition primarily affects older adults with a mean age of 70 years at presentation, and it is more common in men. Patients often have a history of constipation and may be institutionalized or debilitated due to underlying neurologic or psychiatric diseases, that is neuropsychiatric disease like Parkinsonism. Well, doctor, what is the etiopathogenesis of sigmoid valvulus? Good. Sigmoid valvulus occurs when an air-filled loop of sigmoid colon twists about its mesentery. Usually this twist is in a clockwise direction and it is a closed loop obstruction. The degree of torsion is critical. Obstruction occurs when the twist exceeds 180 degrees. Impairment of vascular perfusion occurs when the twist exceeds 360 degrees. An intriguing variant known as iliosigmoid knotting involves the ileum wrapping around the sigmoid, usually also in a clockwise manner. The risk factors for sigmoid valvulus are: number 1, long sigmoid mesocolon; number 2, narrow attachment of sigmoid mesocolon; number 3, overloaded sigmoid colon, which occurs in those who are consuming high fiber diet; number 4, band of adhesion due to peridiverticulitis that will cause an adhesion at the summit of the sigmoid bowel loop. Well explained, doctor. What are the clinical features of sigmoid valvulus? Patient with sigmoid valvulus typically present with: number 1, abdominal pain, often colicky and localized to the left lower quadrant; number 2, abdominal distension due to the obstructed bowel loop resulting in enormous dilatation of abdomen; number 3, absolute constipation or obstipation, that is inability to pass stools and flatus; number 4, tympanic percussion node over the over distended abdomen; number 5, on examination, if the underlying bowel is viable, there will be only distension of the abdomen, which is soft and tympanic on percussion. If underlying bowel is non-viable or gangrenous, then there will be generalized abdominal tenderness with rebound tenderness and gouging. If the underlying bowel is also perforated, not only gangrenous, it is also perforated, then apart from generalized tenderness, rebound tenderness and gouging, these patients will also have rigidity. Very well explained, doctor. What are the diagnostic investigations for sigmoid valveless? Well, number one, abdominal X-ray. The classic coffee bean sign reveals the twisted sigmoid loop resembling a coffee bean. Other names for it are bent inner tube sign, omega sign, Freeman doll sign. Other findings may include dilated sigmoid loop, multiple air fluid levels, and distended colon. We should also do CT scan, which will provide details about the degree of torsion and the vascular compromise to the sigmoid colon, which is very useful for surgical planning. Well, what are the complications can happen in sigmoid valveless, doctor? Number one, bowel ischemia. This is because of impaired blood supply. It can progress to gangrene if not promptly diagnosed and treated immediately. Number two, eventually, these gangrenous bowel loop will go for perforation, which will result in perforative peritonitis. The risk increases with prolonged obstruction. Because of the perforation, eventually the patient will go for septic shock and the patient may die. What is the treatment for sigmoid valveless, doctor? Good. The first thing is, we have to resuscitate the patient. We have to give fluids. We have to correct the electrolyte imbalance. And we should also put a nasogastric tube and decompress the stomach. Number two, we can do detorsion by urgent endoscopic or sigmoidoscopic detorsion can be done, or alternatively, manual detorsion can be attempted under general anesthesia. Surgical intervention can be done. If the bowel is viable, you can do elective sigmoid resection after detorsion. If the bowel is already non-viable or gangrenous or even perforated, then emergency surgery should be done and you have to end up. But after detorsion and doing sigmoidectomy, you should not do primary anastomosis, unlike those patients who are having, the viable bowel. After resection, we can do primary anastomosis. Whereas, if the bowel is already gangrenous, you can do resection, but we should not do primary anastomosis. Instead, you have to do what is called Hartmann's procedure, where you have to do the proximal colon, you have to do an end colostomy. The distal colon, you have to close and keep it inside the peritoneal cavity. Post-op care, close monitoring is very important. Of course, we have to give antibiotics and give all other supportive measures like IV fluids and all. Sigmoidopexy was done in the past for viable sigmoid colon, but currently only elective sigmoidectomy should be done even though the bowel is viable. So we should not do sigmoidopexy. We are not doing it anymore. So whether the bowel is viable or not viable, you have to do sigmoidectomy only. But if the bowel is viable, then we can do elective sigmoidectomy. The bowel is non-viable, then you have to do emergency sigmoidectomy. Very well explained, doctor. Thank you, Professor Dr. Selvaraj, for shedding light on sigmoid valveless. It has been an enlightening discussion. It is my pleasure, MC. Remember, prompt diagnosis and management are key to preventing complications. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in Surgical Educator Podcast. We hope this episode enhances your understanding of sigmoid valvulus. Kindly listen all other episodes also in this Surgical Educator Podcast to gain excellent knowledge in surgery. Until next time, keep learning and stay curious. Bye-bye. Welcome to Surgical Educator Podcast, where we explore fascinating surgical topics. I am your host or Master of Ceremony, and today we are delving into the world of acute appendicitis, an important cause of right lower quadrant abdominal pain. This is a critical topic for medical students and surgical trainees. Joining us today is Professor Dr. Selvaraj, an experienced general and pediatric surgeon. Welcome, Dr. Selvaraj. Thank you for having me, MC. I am excited to discuss this crucial aspect of surgical practice. What is acute appendicitis and why is it important, doctor? Acute appendicitis refers to inflammation of the appendix, a small pouch located at the junction of cecum and ileum. It is important because it's one of the most common surgical emergencies, often requiring prompt surgical intervention to prevent complications such as perforation and peritonitis. Good. What is the epidemiology of acute appendicitis, doctor? Acute appendicitis affects individuals of all ages, but is most common in adolescents and young adults. It has a slight higher incidence in males than females. While the exact cause is unclear, factors such as dietary habits, genetics, and infection may play a role. Well, can you explain the etiopathogenesis of acute appendicitis, doctor? Well, the etiology, two types mainly, obstructive and catarrhal. Number one, obstructive. Acute appendicitis typically occurs when the appendix becomes obstructed, leading to inflammation and bacterial overgrowth. The obstruction can be caused by fecalis, that is hardened stools, worms like Enterobius vermicularis, lymphoid hyperplasia in pediatric patients, or rarely tumors like carcinoid or cecal carcinoma. The second type is catarrhal appendicitis, where the infection spreads hematogenously because of blood-borne infections. Pathogenesis, appendix is obstructed to begin with, so the appendix will get distended. And this distension of the appendix will cause periumbilical pain to begin with. The appendicular intraluminal pressure increases enormously, resulting in occlusion of both venous and arterial blood supply of appendix. This will cause the blood supply to the appendix will be cut off, causing necrosis of appendicular mucosa. The appendicular intraluminal bacteria invade the necrotic appendicular mucosa and infection sets in. This infection then spreads transmurally up to the serosa. At this stage, the periumbilical pain will shift to the right lower quadrant. Appendix may perforate in some cases. It can result in free perforation that will lead to generalized peritonitis, or confined perforation results in appendicular abscess. Appendix can also form a phlegmon or lump, which is the conglomeration of appendix, greater omentum, cecum and ileum. Well explained, doctor. What are the clinical features of acute appendicitis? The clinical features includes right lower quadrant pain. This is the hallmark symptom, often starting as periumbilical pain before migrating or shifting to the right lower quadrant. Number 2, anorexia, that is loss of appetite. Number 3, nausea and vomiting, especially if the inflammation progresses. Patient may also have number 4, low grade fever due to the inflammatory process. This pain, vomiting and fever is the Murphy's triad for the acute appendicitis. On examination, there will be localized tenderness, particularly in McBurney's point, located 1/3 of the way from anterior superior iliac spine to the umbilicus in the spino-umbilical line. Patients also have rebound tenderness and gouging. Sova's test is positive in case of retrocecal appendicitis, whereas obturator test will be positive in case of pelvic appendicitis. Rousing sign is also positive, that is, while pressing the left to lower quadrant pain, patient experiences pain in right lower quadrant. What are the differential diagnoses for right lower quadrant pain? Differential diagnosis can be differentiated for adult female patient, adult male patients and pediatric patients. In adult female patients, of course, the commonest cause in all this age group is acute appendicitis. In adult female patient, the other causes are twisted ovarian cyst, ectopic pregnancy, endometriosis, pelvic inflammatory disease, tubo ovarian pathology, and Mittelmeier. In adult males, of course, here also the commonest cause is acute appendicitis. The other causes are right urinary calculus, Crohn's disease in the terminal ileum, cecal diverticulitis, Valentino's appendicitis, that is actually perforated duodenal ulcer presenting as acute appendicitis, that is called Valentino's appendicitis, named after the celebrity or the Hollywood actor Adolf Valentino. He suffered from this problem, that is perforated duodenal ulcer, but surgeons opened his abdomen, found appendix was normal, but there was turbid fluid, but they didn't bother to look up what is the real cause for that. They did, the appendicectomy and sucked out the turbid fluid and they closed the abdomen. This person, because it is a perforated duodenal ulcer, he went in for septic shock and he died. And that is why this condition is named after him, Valentino appendicitis. The other causes are acute cholecystitis, acute pancreatitis. Medical causes like inferior wall MI and lower lobe pneumonia can also produce abdominal pain in any of the quadrants in the abdomen. In pediatric age group also, the commonest cause is acute appendicitis. The other causes are Meckel's diverticulitis, intussusception, and mesenteric lymphadenitis. Very well explained, doctor. How is acute appendicitis diagnosed? Diagnosis involves, number one, history and physical examination. Assessing for classical signs and symptoms, including tenderness, rebound tenderness, and localized gouging. Appendicitis is a clinical diagnosis. Only in doubtful cases, we have to do investigations like lab tests and imaging tests. Laboratory tests such as complete blood count, including, the total WBC count, the leukocytosis will be there, or increased total WBC count, which will be there, which is often present in acute appendicitis. CRP is also increased because of infection. We should also do differential count of total WBC. In case of acute appendicitis, polymorphs will be much elevated. Imaging studies include ultrasound and CT to visualize the appendix and assess for signs of inflammation. Ultrasound findings for acute appendicitis are, number one, dilated tubular structure. Number two, the diameter of this dilated tubular structure should be more than 6 mm. Number three, appendix is non-compressible. And number four, there will be periappendicular fluid collection. CECT finding, apart from the above four findings, patient will also have what is called fat stranding because of inflamed and edematous mesoappendix. Very well explained, doctor. Is there a scoring system for acute appendicitis? Well, there is a scoring system for acute appendicitis. Appendicitis is a clinical diagnosis. Only when there is doubt regarding the diagnosis of acute appendicitis, we have to do investigations and the scoring. The Alvarado score is commonly used to assess the likelihood of acute appendicitis based on clinical signs, symptoms, and laboratory findings. It helps stratify the patients into low, intermediate, and high risk categories. Alvarado scoring, the following symptoms. Number one, migration of pain from periumbilical to right lower quadrant, 1 point. Anorexia, 1 point. Nausea, also 1 point. Coming to signs, tenderness in right iliac fossa, 2 points. Rebound tenderness, 1 point. Elevated temperature, 1 point. Coming to the lab investigation, leukocytosis, 2 point. Shift to the left, that is 75% of WBCs are polymorphs. This is 1 point. So the total score will be 10, and the first letter of all this finding is called mantrels, and this is the mnemonic for that. If the score, the total score is less than 4, you can discharge the patient. If the score is more than 8, then straight away you can do surgery. If the score is in between, that is 4 to 7, then you have to admit the patient and you have to observe the patient whether it is whether they are developing typical symptoms and signs, you have to observe. Very good, doctor. What complications can arise from acute appendicitis preoperatively? Well, complications include, number one, perforation, rupture of the inflamed appendix leading to peritonitis and abscess formation. Number two, abscess, collection of pus within and around appendix. Number three, sepsis, systemic infection resulting from untreated or severe cases of acute appendicitis. Well, how is acute appendicitis treated, doctor? Well, treatment involves surgical intervention only, usually in the form of an appendicectomy. that is removal of the inflamed appendix. This can be performed both laparoscopically or open surgical approach, depending on the patient's condition and surgeon's preference. If simple appendicitis, you can do either open or lap appendectomy. If perforated appendicitis, then you have to do exploratory laparotomy, appendicectomy, and thorough peritoneal toileting. If appendicular abscess, which is less than 5 cm, then you can do ultrasound guided needle aspiration or tube drain, that is one end pigtail catheter you can use. If the diameter is more than 5 cm, then you should do open drainage of this appendicular abscess. If appendicular lump is there already, then you have to do Asnes-Serrin's regimen of conservative treatment, which includes patients should be kept nil peroral, IV fluids should be given, you have to start IV broad spectrum antibiotics, should give analgesic and anti-inflammatory drugs, and you have to monitor vital signs every 2 hours. If it is a successful surgery, then the size of the tumor will regress, the pulse rate will come down, the temperature also will come down. In spite of giving this conservative treatment, if patient's swelling is progressively increasing in size, or patient is tachycardic, or still elevated temperature, then this means this is a failure Asnes-Serrin's regimen. You have to discontinue the conservative treatment and you have to do surgery. What are the post-op complications after appendicectomy, doctor? After open appendicectomy, patients may develop post-op adhesive obstruction even many years after surgery. In lap appendicectomy, patients may develop stump appendicitis if surgeons leave behind lengthy appendicular stump. In perforated appendicitis, patient may develop post-op residual intraperitoneal abscess if peritoneal toileting was not done adequately. Number 4, if the ligature at the base of the appendix slips, these patients develop fecal fistula. Thank you, Professor Dr. Selvaraj, for your excellent discussion on acute appendicitis. This information is invaluable for medical professionals at all stages of their careers. It has been a pleasure to me, MC. I hope this discussion helps our audience to gain a deeper understanding of acute appendicitis and its management. Early recognition and timely intervention are crucial for optimal outcomes. Absolutely, doctor. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Surgical Educator Podcast on Acute Appendicitis. Keep exploring the world of surgery by watching our all other episodes in this Surgical Educator Podcast. Until next time, stay curious and keep on learning. Bye-bye.